Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm Barry Stice and Jack. South Time on Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 30. NASDAQ Futures down 122. These are the, we've got the Junes and the Septembers trading together, but I think the Junes come off the board this week. Actually, the Septembers are trading 6058, and the Junes are trading 6004. They're both down 31 bucks. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do, and I'm actually more than a little surprised.
About what?
Well, you know, all the noise coming out of the various mouths last night, Trump leaving the G7 early, flying back. There was a thing flying around. The National Security Council was apparently recalled to be available as soon as he hit the ground in the United States. Basically... He all but said he was going to blow Iran to Mars as soon as he got back to the U.S. yesterday.
And we would do that why?
It seems as though Nettie wants him to get involved in this, and the noises he made was that he was absolutely going to do it. And
well, I'm sure he did. He was talking about evacuating Tehran. Do you have any idea how big Tehran is? How do you evacuate a city that size?
Well, I mean, if you say, evacuate Tehran, what you've essentially threatened to do is nuke the country.
I would say you're correct. Now, do we say evacuate Tokyo? How can anybody do that? Evacuate New York?
Well, again, I mean, evacuate a city would be, we're not talking about, there's an ammo dump over here and we're going to blow it up, okay? I mean, whatever. No, The character of the threat was pretty clear.
Well, sure it was. And does anybody here want him to do that?
Well, I hope not. I sat here and I looked at this, and when this popped up on my feed, I happened to be doing some work yesterday because normally I'm not that time of day. I'm off doing fun things, but unfortunately FedEx decided that they were going to claim I wasn't here for something that I had to have when I was. But my guess is that they left the package in their depot instead of putting it on the truck. And rather than admit that they screwed up, they said, the business closed. Excuse me, no signature required, number one. And secondly, this is my house.
And
by the way, it's not a very expensive thing, but it happens to be something that I have to have in order to finish a piece of work that I'm doing. So I'm sitting here, trying to sort all this out, and this comes across my screen while I'm, at my computer, and I've still got my trading console open, because during the week, futures trade all night, right? So I'm sitting here looking at this, and this comes out, and I'm like, where's the lock limit down?
I don't think anybody believes a word. I mean, the dude says. I mean,
well, that's obvious because if anybody believed that he was going to launch a nuclear strike on Tehran or get behind Netanyahu, who was about to do the same thing, it doesn't really matter whose bomb it is, right? you would have thought.
Well, I'm all for Israel having the higher ground here to a point. As you know, that's been my position the whole way, and I think that's where most people are. And,
my thing is this. It is, I'm just from a practical perspective, right? It is not possible, and I've pointed this out many times. It is not possible for any state level actor that wants a nuclear device we're not talking about necessarily hydrogen bombs, but a nuclear bomb. It is not possible to prevent them from obtaining some modest number of them. Can't be done. I could assemble one of these, assuming I'm willing to die, okay, because you would. You'd irradiate
yourself. That's a big difference. People are willing to die or burn or not.
Well, but assuming I was willing to die, I could build one in my garage if I had the materials, okay, and it would work. Now, would it be efficient? No. Does it have to be? No.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, that's the thing, is that, and you know, and I am not a trained nuclear physicist, okay, and yet I'm 100% confident that it would work. Now, you know, if I'm that confident, then anybody with a modicum of that kind of knowledge, of which every nation has some number of people, is capable of doing this. The only issue is the supply of the actual raw material. That's it. And the second thing, which is really starting to get under my skin, because, you know, we had all this stuff going on when the Iraq thing was going on, right? And I bought into it for quite a period of time, that Iraq actually was in the process of obtaining material. And again, I've known this since I was a kid, that's the only barrier, all right? And I bought it. So as it turns out, I was lied to along with everybody else, you know, the whole yellow cake thing and all that, right? And that was BS. And that was later proved to be BS. And not a single person was strung up as a result of all the death and destruction that was leveled upon people due to that lie. Nobody.
We're still reeling from it today.
Well, but nobody paid for
yeah.
it. Okay? And the thing is, then you just had, just in the last couple of days, you had, you know, Netanyahu out there saying that not only was, you know, Iran days away from having one, which is why he did what he did. That was his justification. But in addition to that Trump was personally targeted for assassination by the Iranians. He made that statement in public. I've about had it with this stuff. And you know, if we get dragged into this thing, they want to have it out. You know, look, people have fought over that piece of land for how many thousands of years?
Well, the Iranians are, we're not sure exactly what. We have a couple of regimes that seem, yeah, they're totally, their agenda is, you know, they don't want Israel around, they don't want us around, we're all the great Satan, and they got it all figured out, and they seem willing to use people and use violence to get there. But you also have an awful lot of people that are very willing to listen because their economies are in shambles, everything's a mess. Everybody from the age 18 to 35 is not working, and half of them are armed, and by the way, they're willing to listen to anybody, it appears. The problems underneath the covers are dramatic, and nobody seems seems to give a crap about them. And you know, we have people in I think that Guantanamo. Last time we talked, we had our friend who was a guest that they can't go back to Yemen because the place is such a mess. They'll get killed the minute they get there. I mean, these areas. I don't think people. I can't imagine. You know, maybe Mike Murphy can because he's been in a couple of them, but I can't even imagine what I was asking him yesterday. How do people live in these places? Is there any cash? Is there a job? Does anybody go to work? What even happens? Why are we shocked that Hamas wins an election in Gaza?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't sure as hell don't want them running any place. And if they didn't exist, it probably would be better for the world. But how does something like that? How does not a Hitler come out of the ruins of Berlin?
It's just
a question of what his name was going to be.
Well, yeah,
and the West did that,
Chief,
to a certain extent.
I don't understand why people are surprised that, you know, that this kind of thing comes out of that sort of chaos. Okay, I mean that's like, to me that's somewhere between crazy and lunatic fringe nonsense. Okay, that anybody's shocked that kind of a thing occurs. My problem with what we're doing right now is that we have all this kind of crazy stuff going on at the present time. We have We have an economic dislocation that we have built in this country on purpose through absolute profligacy that is beyond compare. It is a pattern that has occurred multiple times throughout history in many other nations, and it has always ended in the same place. It has always been the ruination of the nation that does it.
We're not like Nazi Germany. We're not like some of these other places. But on a smaller scale, the patterns are right there. We have a lot of people who feel
That's right.
A lot of people who feel that they have been economically harmed over the last 20 years by certain people, and the person who is smart enough, devious enough, crazy enough to point a finger at who exactly the people that is that got all your money. And it's stunning to me here that we have somebody who's pointing at people that have been here for 3 years as being the source of all the drain of your cash, and we're not looking upwards, we're looking downwards. And it bothers the bejesus out of me every day that people in this country are believing that. It's not the top seven companies in this world or the health industry. It's the guys that somehow swam across the river the last 4 years have drained all the money out of this country. Anybody believes that, and our people do, it just beyond me. Now, which isn't to say the immigration problem isn't a problem. It sure as hell is. It's top seven, but it's not top two to me. I mean, it just isn't.
Well, the thing is it's all part of enabling the same garbage.
Yeah, well, exactly okay. Right.
I mean, that's what I keep trying to point out to people is that this is, when you really get down to it, what we're talking about is the same crap, and yet the monster has to be fed.
Yep.
And in order for the markets to be happy and for everybody to rah, 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 you know, the acceleration needs to continue. I saw there was a thing that was up, I don't remember which media site I saw it on, but it was, but the facts that were presented were true, okay? And one of them is that the cost of health, so-called insurance, right? And they didn't talk about the fact that the quality has gone to hell during this period of time. But they said that the cost of this has gone up by over 300% since after the dot-com crash. Okay, well, I can tell you that is approximately, it's actually worse than that. Why? Because after I sold my internet company, of course, I had to buy my own coverage. I didn't have the subsidy of the company paying for it anymore. All right. I mean, when I did, I was an employee. So therefore, guess what? I got the same, you know, the same thing that everybody else got, because that's how it works, right? You know, unlike some places that, you know, give the CEO these golden, you know, platinum plated nonsense. No, I had the same healthcare plan that everybody else is building.
No, you see, you're not set up for leadership in this country. You're supposed to have way better, because you're way better.
Well, yeah, I'm way better and I'm worth way more, so you know, I should get more. But I didn't look at it that way. But the thing is that the number of times that somebody would either quit or get fired, and then they'd get the COBRA statement in the mail and they'd call me, and every four-letter word that's in the dictionary and a few that they invented on their own would come out of their mouths about how it was raping them and, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, look, the law says I can't do that. Okay, this is the same amount of money that I had a check I had to write every single month to the company for you to have this, and I don't care whether you believe it or not. If you think I'm full of crap, you know, call up whatever regulator, whatever, you know, enforcement agency, whatever. They'll come in here, they'll audit me, and I'm telling you right now, it's the number, because it's not worth. I'm not, you know, for me to try to steal, you know, $300 a month from you is not worth going to jail.
Well, but if anybody actually did it, would you mind if we took? We got plenty of time. I promised to only take 2 minutes to do a cost accounting thing. I sent you guys that letter about the young lady I know who had the surgery.
Yeah,
and to make this as brief as possible, the lady had some surgery that ended up needing a neurosurgeon. All right, so there was something about some nerve that was pinched someplace that was causing it. Doesn't matter.
Right.
So she ends up getting it done here, and I think she told me, now I didn't go into full details, she said the bill was like $150,000. Now maybe the insurance company paid $100,000. I don't know. But I think what I can, just to prove to everybody, Carl, that I still can do a little cost accounting on my own and maybe add my head a little bit. I promise I don't have a calculator here. Let's just walk through for 45 seconds and recreate this bill. Let's say the neurosurgeon made $1 million a year. Okay, that's how much per day? We get 200 days. Is it $5,000? Is that right?
Yeah.
I think I'm right. Let's say he has two assistants making half that. That's another. Now we're assuming this is the only surgery they did that day, which is another massive assumption, right?
Well, of course, which is nonsense.
Okay,
right.
But I'm trying to be as charitable as I can here to the institutions.
Understood.
Let's say there's four other people in there that make $150 a year. So let's say that's another $5,000 for that day, right?
Right.
Now, the room probably costs, let's say, $10 million. I'll put a big number in it, and so that's, what is that? That's another, a 5% interest rate. What is that? That's $500,000 a year, right?
Yeah, that'd be about right.
All right, so yep. Let's say that's another, let's give them another $5,000, even though it's not, okay? They might be paying 10%. Let's say it's another $5,000. All right, I'm up to 20,000. Let's throw another, you know, 3,000 in there for sutures and sponges, which is a little off the chart, right?
I mean, that's off the rack, but yeah. We'll go ahead and give it to him.
All right, so now we're up to $23,000. Where the bleep does this $100,000-some bill come from? What is the overhead rate? 700?
Chief, this is, you know, this is the basic problem that you have, is that, and this is, however, where the whole illegal immigrant thing and everything else, you know, does feed into this. Okay, people don't want to hear this, but it's the truth. All right, you know, we have all these people, you know, they had all these rallies the last few days, right? Supposedly, you know, oh, you know, ICE is terrible. Blah, 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 blah. All right, so here's the thing. You have all these people saying, well, you know, my free healthcare or these people's free healthcare. There's no such thing as free.
Well, there's no such thing as free, but on a cost accounting basis, it could be free. Somebody walks into accounting and gets a stitch done by somebody sitting there who's on salary. What does it cost? Nothing.
Well, but no physician actually works for free.
I understand that.
Okay, the building is not free. It takes money to build it, clean it, maintain it, supply it, and da 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 da. So the same thing with the claims of free housing or whatever have you. You can't wish.
I understand
it.
Hey, let me finish this story for a quick second. These guys not only charged, let's say they got a 50% discount they bleep it up. She's not fixed.
Right.
So she finds out that one of the best places to go for this particular thing was Japan. So she and her mom hightail it over Japan, get a surgeon over there, the guy fixes it, and she's fine. She looks terrific, by the way. $10,000.
Yeah.
I'll wager you a top shelf drink that the surgeon in Japan makes more than the surgeon here.
Probably.
And if the whole total value was $10,000, plus it was $10,000 to bring her mom and her out, and she couldn't fly back for, this involved her head, she couldn't fly any for 2.5 weeks or something. So she and her mom toured Japan. That cost $10,000, and the surgery, the whole MRIs, all the other stuff, all the tests, everything were $10,000.
Yeah.
And she's fixed. Now I'm sitting here going,
and she's fixed.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there, what the bleep?
Well, here's the reason, okay. Over in Japan, there isn't a guy who gets shot, goes to county, and you get his $25,000 bill.
Well, okay, that's another. I'm surprised you led me down that road, because actually the Tribune or somebody here had a. I don't know why I didn't keep this, Carl. Maybe I might have sent it to you, but it was years ago. Shooting suspect, because if you're shot, you're shot. A guy who's shot enters the emergency room at county, and they start doing this stuff on him. X-rays, you know, $1,000 a pop, something, $1,000 a pop, blood tests, something, something, something. Well, within like 2 hours, they're up to like $50,000. And I'm
the guy's got $50,000, and they haven't actually fixed anything yet.
And I'm going, right. Okay, wait a minute. The X-ray machine is sitting there. The X-ray technician is sitting there.
And they already bought both.
Yeah, it's not. You're right. On a fixed, you can't use cost accounting, a variable cost thing, forever, because you go broke, right? But the fact is, on an incremental cost basis, This guy questioned nothing, really.
Well, and oh, by the way, imaging used to be done with sheets of film. Now it's done with electronic sensors,
so, I mean,
so they're not consumed.
I'm not. Don't get the idea that I'm saying this is free-free. It's not free-free. It's but the idea that this is some hundred and some thousand dollar bill, and one of the ladies used to live, she actually was a bartender on here and went to school for some kind of medical stuff. Well, now she's like an absolute genius on who gets paid what where. Like if you're, right. I mean, if you're 15, I think you're technically covered by Medicaid if you don't have anything else, right?
Well, it depends on the state.
But I mean, somebody from county is going to send this bill somewhere. Now, right. What's really the bill? I mean, is it?
Right.
I mean, what are we doing here? I mean,
again, it goes back to where I started, which is that these kinds of monsters, when you let them get built, and you don't stop it, they become the self-licking ice cream cone. Okay, in that, you know, now all of a sudden, the people are like, well, you know, last year, and it's the same thing that happens in, you know, in academia, and it happens in government. We have a $1 million budget. We're, you know, 3 weeks from the end of the fiscal year. By God, there's $100,000 there. How much printer paper and toner cartridges can we buy so that we make sure we use up the whole thing? All right. Why? Because if you don't, you won't get that next year. So you do. It has nothing to do with whether or not you actually provided value to human beings for the money that was spent. It has nothing to do with it. And we've gone so far down that road in so many different areas that it all of these other things have been fed into it.
Well, you know what the system... Now, this is a bright guy. By the way, he's retired now. He's not tall when he was in med school. And when I was in grad school, I mean, to this day, I will bet it hasn't changed much. Kyle, do you know how a hospital decides how much a patient night there costs?
Well, I'm probably going to throw up, but go ahead and tell me.
Well, the amount of money we spend divided by the amount of patient nights.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And that's, but again, Chief, it's...
They don't want to hire me, because that's not the way I would do it.
No, well, they don't want me anywhere near this stuff. I've been yelling about it for 30 years. But this is the kind of thing that you cannot incrementally reform it. It's impossible, because as soon as you try, you get the kind of ads that were run when Bush was running the first time, with Granny in a wheelchair being shoved off a cliff. All right, and that's and oh, by the way, if you think that's bad, you look at what they've done with cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. And the fact of the matter is, when you get down to it, the entire reason, I mean, you know, at the root, an awful lot of cancer is caused by ionizing radiation. Okay. The reason we as a species are here is because of ionizing radiation. All right.
Well, it's also caused by, especially for people who are older, the incidence of people that worked in factories with all kinds of crazy solvents. And by the way, if you happen to be in Vietnam, you're on A number one list.
Well, but yeah, okay. I mean, chemical irritants, all kinds of. But you know, there are so many things that we learn the hard way. I mean, you know, the thing with asbestos, for example, the whole reason that asbestos was used so widely originally is because chemically it's nearly entirely inert. Okay, you can dunk it in acid and nothing happens.
Well, plus all you had to do was have that Lady of Angels fire and you got something.
Well,
but that's the reason
it was used. Okay, as an insulating material, things like this. Nobody believed that something that was chemically inert would be a cancer. And now, I mean, you know, everybody understood, look, if you get a snoot full of it and it coats your lungs, you know, it screws up the air transfer and mechanically suffocates you. But nobody believed that it was going to be a cancer promoter. But as it turns out, it is.
Well, the sin in all this, and I got the first example, the simplest example, and what you're talking about in the hospital, so I don't want to lose that train of thought. Yeah. There is such a thing in me. You ever see pictures of when DDT was invented?
Oh, yeah.
People were taking the powder And, you know, in some places of the world, you have, like, kind of little creepy crawly things down where you have hair. Not to say, yeah. People were taking almost like a baby powder thing in DDT and shoving it in their pants. I mean, yeah. It was thought to just be, it took decades for people to realize that, you know, you're killing all your eagles, you're killing everyone with this stuff.
By the way, an awful lot of that stuff that went around the media, Silent Spring, that was a scam. That was a lie.
Okay, but I'm saying it takes
it's
while.
It's not true.
Even the asbestos stuff. I mean, the funny part, we used to have, this is back, I was going to say something like this back when you had real schools, but we would have stuff in some of the English classes when I was younger, and they'd pass around these pamphlets. This is what really you should do in public school today. Everything's not homework. You pass a pamphlet around, it was 4 or 5 pages, and it was a story. One of them was on Yogi Bear, but one of them was on asbestos, believe it or not. I'm in high school.
Yeah.
It had to do with a plant. I remember this because as soon as the name came up, I just never forgot it. It had to do with there was an asbestos plant, I believe, in Puerto Rico. And everybody's sitting there making asbestos, not even, you know, actually mine asbestos, but then what you do with it to get to where you can use it for something. But,
right.
And they were talking about there are all kinds of stray dogs all around the plant. And all these stray dogs were getting cancer at like age 2 or 3.
Which is like wildly unlikely,
yeah,
right.
So people knew, so my sin in all this, if you find something that really helps out society, whatever it is, and 20 years later you find out that it has a secret problem like asbestos or DDT, I think somewhat, Carl, you're morally okay, except the first day you're aware of it, if you deny it and keep going, then I think the fifth ring of hell is ready for you. But
yeah,
if the first day you go, wait a minute, we just had a vet check out these dogs. Obviously,
we got
a problem. We're shutting this place down. Anything that happened before that, I think you're kind of off the hook. But the minute you know, then I think you got a problem.
I'm 100% with you on that. And you know, it's interesting because, like, you know, this thing that went around with this, it extends all over the place. You look at this story that went around. We traded a few emails on it with this thing with the refrigerator-sized box that makes gasoline.
Yep.
Right out of the air.
Hey, how about we hold this? Because I'm not sure Kenny's calling in, but let's hold this if you're the back end or for Friday. Hey, real, give me a second on my division and how the hospitals work.
Yeah.
Every Republican guys and ladies, big hero, well, I guess Trump maybe now, but was Dutch, Ronald Reagan. Well, he came up with a deal that we're paying too much money for women to have kids in the hospital for 5 days. And by the medical stuff had got to the point where they didn't really, have to be in there 5 days after having a kid. All right, we're going to kick them out after 4. A year later, they found out they didn't save a dime because now the same amount of money was spent divided by less patient days. It just turned out to be more per day, right?
Because that's how they did it.
That's how they did it.
And the problem with no competition.
Yep.
And no enforcement of antitrust laws is that you end up here.
Right. Right. Can we have Joel?
We do. I just saw him pop up.
All right. Well, let's do Joel. We'll see if Kenny comes back on. Otherwise, I'll talk to you. This Thursday is messing up my not having a show Thursday, messing up my schedule. I got
to
move on.
Just have to be Friday, and I'll have to keep you entertained.
Yeah. Well, you might be back. If Kenny's on the road, we'll see. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Ah, good morning, Chief. Good morning. Got the whole crew here today, huh?
Yeah, well, we're good. So what do you make of this? I guess we want to be, I'm not so sure I would ever suggest this spread. What do you want to be, long silver, short Bitcoin this morning? I don't know if I would even imagine that one, would you?
Well, silver's been playing the catch-up game just kind of quietly here, underperforming gold for the long time, so the gold-silver ratio is now, you know, coming back a little bit more into historical lines. Bitcoin is its own animal, Chief. Been trading above 100,000 for quite some time here. Hasn't quite formed that base, where you can really see the bulls stepping up, higher lows. I mean, the sky's the limit, but a lot of the trading action for the month of June, the majority of the trading action has been between 105 and 110. I'm looking basis to September futures. So Yeah, as you know, a stock in an upward trend consolidates. The next move is consolidation to move higher. So that's where, how I'm looking at Bitcoin.
So we're officially calling it a stock now?
I'm referring to technical analysis and the methods of technical analysis.
All right, I get it.
It's about the only way I can evaluate Bitcoin.
I think you're probably right on that. What do you make of what's kind of going on here? One day we're having wars, the next day we're at ceasefires, the next day the president going to the G7 and allegedly leaving for some reason. Maybe he wasn't being treated like he wanted to be treated, or maybe some other reason. I mean, I have no idea with these people, but let's assume that he's back here for what he says, and that there's something's going on in the Middle East. I mean, Iran is a bad person in the area and other areas. They seem to take advantage of places that are really in bad shape, like Yemen and Gaza and other places where people are evidently dying to do something different, because otherwise they're just dying. It's a group that doesn't like us and doesn't like Israel, and the question is, how far can you go with them? I don't know. It's kind of new territory, isn't it?
Chief, believe it or not, you summed it up pretty well. There's been a global nuclear threat from Iran for quite some time. The U.S. has tried different negotiation tactics. The world has tried different negotiation tactics. When the goal is for me to destroy stocks and jocks with whatever I can do and just annihilate stocks and jocks, what should stocks and jocks do? Should they just lie down, let it happen, or should they fight back?
Well, I think you definitely got to fight back. The question is, how much is preemptive and how isn't? Like I said, it's kind of new territory. I honestly don't know the morals. That's why I'm asking.
But the market doesn't care, Chief. The market doesn't care.
The market doesn't
give a damn about a world war. They don't give a damn about tariffs. You know, look at this. This is just a mirage. The S&P is down 27 now.
Oh, yeah.
Global war. I mean, what more could you be asking for? A lower open. We'll end up green on the day. This is not investment advice. I'm being a little bit facetious.
Oh, you're not. I mean, I last week, I don't know if I went through the number. I'm not going to go through them again, but I went through about 7 big countries in the world. In the last 4 months, every one of them was starting to pour money into their economy, meaning their stock market. So at the end of the day, the world could look like it's being blown up. Everybody's got checks on their desk, and they got to put in the market, right?
That's the way it is, and who might join the foray in July too? I mean, who knows what the Fed's going to do? Inflation numbers have been coming down seemingly on the surface, at least is what we're being showed. A little bit of slowdown in the economy, Why not grease the machine again and lower rates in July? I'm not exactly a fan of that, but many people are for sure looking at October and maybe one or two. So as long as they keep greasing the wheels, this market's going to continue. And
what to what end? I'm asking a question. We're all dropped into the habit. Me too, of listening to essentially the BS. I mean, when I call BS, what these guys are talking about. They claim that, he's not lowering rates, so Trump's all pissed off at him, right, allegedly. Yet, last month, money supply growth was 8%.
Okay.
I mean, it's been over five before that for like a real long time. That is inflationary. It's at 8%, it's wildly inflationary. It's designed to keep asset prices where they are, because it appears to be that's the people that control the place. Yet Trump still goes after the guy. And we're doing that worldwide. Now, why does anybody need to listen to the guy? You look at the numbers, they're right there. That's what they're doing. Matter of fact, they stopped. They were letting the balance sheet run down. Not one person mentioned last month when they came out and said, well, we're going to stop doing that. Okay, that's a big... How is that not even reported? And why listen to the other BS? I mean, this is what they're doing. It's right there.
Chief, you understand the inner workings of that a lot better, you know, than I do. But the bottom line is, you know, that the money is still coming in.
Yes.
And it's just coming in under, you know, a different cloak, a different way. So, but I mean, it's at a point now where you just, like, if this, what's going on in the Middle East, if with the situation we're seeing now, if this can't bust the market, then I mean, you just make it think that it's absolutely invincible. And you know what happens when you start thinking like that? The unexpected happens. But,
Joel, why, you know, in regards to the Middle East, why, if I'm bullish on the market, which, you know, to a certain extent I am, why don't I just put this in the category? Is this the I know it's at least the second time, but isn't the third time where Israel thought Iran got a little close on their nuclear stuff?
I believe this is the second time that they did a major, you know, I believe it was back at the end of 2024.
But there was one a long time ago, like 7-8 years ago, wasn't it?
Man, I don't know.
But I'm saying what happened was they went over, they did their stuff. Iran did the, you know, shoot off the rockets, a few land, a few don't. And Israel basically thought, well, okay, they had to do something. It's not horrible. And then we just sat for another 5 years. Is that going to happen again? This time you kind of smack Iran.
Does it feel that way, Chief?
No, it doesn't. But I mean, the last couple of times, you basically smacked Iran back in the corner. And they said, okay, and you know they're probably going to come out someday with some other crap. But in the meantime, it's okay for a while. I mean, and you're saying this one's not going to end that way.
It doesn't feel that way.
Well, I think a lot of people think, I'm not saying they're right and you're wrong, but the market seems to feel that way. Okay, it's going to be a week or two. We got to put up with this. And then Iran's going to be wounded enough where they're not going to do anything for another 10 years or 5 years. We know we're not going to change their way of thinking. But we seem to have kicked the crap out of them with the Houthis. We seem to have Gaza under control, when I say we. And also Hezbollah in Lebanon looks like they're kind of useless now, too. So, I mean, and now we knock out some of their best guys, and I don't know. I mean, other than being a pain in the ass to everybody, they seem to be losing on all fronts, don't they?
That's what worries me.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, and you did mention it at the end there, I think what's different from when you're talking about the prior attack, the one a few years ago, is that there's much more of a unstable geopolitical situation. I mean, the Gaza, the war between Israel and Gaza here it's going to be 2 years in October. What the plan is to, you know, weaken Israel, you know, on as many fronts as possible. And, you know, they can only deploy so much resources. So as long as it stays in this realm of, you know, Israel, Gaza, Israel, Iran, I think that your scenario is more likely than not. If there becomes further escalation on either end, it won't be. I mean, Israel only has one ally. So on the other end, then, you know, you're talking, but you know what? You just gotta, you know, you gotta own stocks no matter what, because if the world goes to hell in a handbasket, who cares, right? So you just gotta be on the market.
Well, I mean, at any level, you look at this, and I love talking to you about it because you are capable of talking on a lot of different. Well, everybody on the show is. That's why I love doing the show. It's you're not gonna have, and this is not Israel's fault, okay? You're not gonna have a country. Being it whoever it is, sitting in a place where they're, I'll say, fairly rich.
Vulnerable.
No, vulnerable, yes, but also fairly rich, fairly whatever, when all the countries around you, nobody can afford to eat. I'm not saying it's their fault that they have to fix it, but the fact is that's a horrible situation. Somehow or another, the problem in Syria, I can't imagine what a hellhole that is now. Gaza, I can imagine because I see it. The West Bank. I mean, I don't know. Jordan's got more refugees than they do people, so that can't be a great. Somehow or another, there needs to be somewhat of a fix over the next 10 years in the whole place. And I don't know. My brother told me today he's going to do his research on on world grain prices. And the last time world grain prices got over $5 a day, when nobody makes over $5 a day worldwide, that's when you had your Arab Spring. You had all kinds of uprisings all over the damn place. So I think that this is all kind of tied together.
I do too. And you know what, Chief? I'll have a resolution for something that's been going on thousands of years next Tuesday when I tune in. So, no, great discussion as always, Chief. Always learning something from you. Go Blue, not much to report on the sports front, but college football just around the corner.
Do me a favor. If you find out the solution before Tuesday, let me know. I'll have you on earlier.
Okay, thanks, Chief. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
SP Futures down 28 and NASDAQ Futures down 29. Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, can you make head or tail about what's going on in the world here? Because if you can, you're better than the rest of us.
No, you can make heads or tail. You know, it's something, the truth is, it's something that had to happen. We all know it. I think that Israel did the world a favor, quite honestly. But it needs to come to an end. To Trump's point, and actually a lot of other points, they can't have a nuclear bomb, and so until they eliminate it, then it's not going to be over. I suspect it's going to take another couple of days, and then it's going to be over.
Well, that's what I was just mentioning to Joel. He feels that somehow his time's different. It won't be over, but I am with you on this, and I'm hoping we're right.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that Israel's done an amazing job kind of taking them out. Look what they've done. I mean, you have to be honest. Israel hasn't wasted any time. You know, they took out a lot of military sites and enrichment sites and all that stuff, but they haven't gotten that final nuclear site that's buried deep underground, which they have to eliminate.
How does anybody even know what's in there?
I don't actually know how they know what's in there. I don't. Is it underground radar? I have no idea how they know what's in there.
I mean, I'm a huge supporter of the state of Israel. I'm not a fan of Netanyahu at all.
Right.
I think he'll do anything to stay in power.
Well, okay, that might be true, but I mean, you cannot deny the fact that they did the world a favor.
I'm not denying that. I just was saying, was saying to Joel, all this stuff comes together. The reason why, you know, Gaza, Lebanon, all these places, Yemen, are ripe for the taking, and the influence with bad people is because they're hellholes.
Yes, correct.
And nobody seems to want to. I'm not saying it's our job. I'm not saying so. It's if you have. I mean, we mentioned with Carl earlier that the state Germany was in the late 20s. Hitler was coming. Just question what name the guy was, right?
Right, right.
And I think look at Gaza. It's not a shock to me that Hamas wins an election there. And should it be a shock to anybody?
Right.
I mean these.
No.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's all kind of tied together. It's worldwide inflation. It's not jobs. It's whenever you have, and I say this because I honestly believe it, and I think I could dig back, and when you have 40% unemployment and males 18 to 35, you got a problem.
100%. 100%.
And I was asking, Mike Murphy was on yesterday, and he's been stationed in some of these places, and I'm a homeboy. You're always traveling around, but I'm... What is a day like in Gaza or Venezuela or Lebanon or Syria?
I have no idea.
Does anybody get up and go to work?
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
I can't either. I mean, I don't even... Where do I go to work? Well, is anybody paying? Is there a factory? I know they have markets. They have that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, people grow stuff or whatever. They have that kind of thing, and people are making stuff they can, you know, rugs and whatever. And there's markets and there's commerce of some kind, but how do you even... I mean, how do you... Venezuela hasn't had a currency that was worth a crap for 10 years. How do you get on a bus? You wave to the guy?
Yeah. I think you wave and they stop wherever they stop. They don't. There's not necessarily, you know, any normal stops like we have, you know, in the United States. They just wave it down and it stops and they jump on. Do they pay? Probably not. It's just, I don't know how it works, but it works. I guess it works for them.
Well, it works as long as we don't hear about it.
Right. Yeah, correct. In the meantime, I think what ends up happening was we saw the market. The minute the market thinks that the conflict is going to subside, you know, naturally they come back in and they take stocks higher, which is exactly what they did. On Friday when it broke out, they sold stocks off because people get anxious. They get emotional, right? So they make emotional decisions, which is fine, but I think it's wrong, right? Because you and I both know that geopolitical situations cause short-term chaos. and sometimes provide actually long-term opportunity, because people make emotional decisions, stocks get mispriced, and boom, the thesis hasn't changed for the stock. The thesis hasn't changed for investing. It's just that people become emotional. That then becomes the opportunity, right? And then yesterday you saw the minute it kind of calms down or appears as if it's calming down, they came right back in. The algos and the traders come right back in and they take stocks higher again. Now this morning, there's a negative headline because what did Trump mean by that post last night? Everybody should evacuate Tehran. What does that mean? Are they going to start bombing the smithereens out of Tehran? I don't know. My guess is it's not. My guess is that was just him being him. But you don't know.
Well, that's a dangerous him being him, isn't it?
It is dangerous. I agree, which is why the markets are once again nervous this morning. So oil is up again, right? It sold off kind of substantially yesterday, but now it's up. Stocks are down again, right, on the idea of what's coming. I don't really think I think he was being a bully when he did that. I don't think they're going to start bombing Tehran. I just don't think they are. I do think they're going to start bombing that nuclear site, the one that's buried underground, for sure. I think they're going to do that. And I think in order for them to bring it to a close, they have to, right? They can't leave Iran in a position where they have the nuclear capability, so they have to destroy it. Once they destroy it, then it's time to move on for everybody.
But then it's a question of what is nuclear capability? I mean,
I agree, and I'm not in the space. But what I do know is that they got this. They supposedly have this nuclear facility underground where they're enriching uranium at 60% purity, you know, when they only need 3.6%.
I guess my question is, well, you know, I don't know. You read all kinds of stuff, and on the show, as you probably can guess, my theme is we're going to open things up to all kinds of different directions to look at things, and we're going to see what kind of pieces together. And I wonder. Well, yesterday the big news was, I don't know if you saw it, that the two Chinese planes turned their transport.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, transponders off and landed in Iran. Now those guys have had a deal for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, they're giving them discounted oil. Do you have any idea, all the people you talk to, what's the discount? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. I have no idea what the discount is.
What we're talking about is allegedly China lent them money for what? They're building a second railroad or some crap? There's a railroad they lent them money for and a couple of roads. And in return, they're gonna give them oil as a discount, as a quid pro quo. Is that?
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. I'd rather lent the money to build this nuclear facility. You know, what did they really lend them the money for? The facility or for roads? I mean,
one of the things, and this could totally change, Kenny, and I'd love your input, but I read like 10 years ago that the hardest place the CIA, the Mossad, anybody who wants to do it, has ever tried to put shoes on the ground in another country has been Iran. For some reason, nobody seems to meld in. The Secret Service is pretty damn good, and it's harder to put, I'll use the term, spy there than it ever was in Russia or here or Germany or someplace. And I don't know why. All of a sudden now somebody seems to have all this quote information where all their big guys are. Are they intercepting their cell phones? Are they doing it electronically? Or are people in the country who can't stand their leadership turning to our side? I mean, I'm just curious how they're doing it.
Well, I think the news that Mossad was inside Iran when they started those bombings last week, to think how the Israelis got themselves inside the country, all he speaks to me is that how desperate the country is, right? I don't think there's a lot of supporters in that country that support the current regime. Right? So therefore, I think it's probably easy to find people that will turn on the government.
I don't think I'd want to be a Mossad agent assigned there.
Well, I don't either. But one way or the other, they did. They had people in. Look what they did. The first attack, they took it all out in three or four swipes. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Kenny, I think this is the third time this happened. It was a couple years ago, but wasn't it like 8 or 10 years ago they did the same thing?
I can't remember. I think so. I don't remember how long ago.
But it was the same sort of thing. They went over, knocked out whatever they thought the nuclear thing was, knocked off a couple of leaders. And Iran did their Scud Plus type missiles, caused some problems over in Israel because they really can't even aim the damn things. They just land where they land. And then all of a sudden, that was it. I mean, they basically slapped him back, I'll use the term, in the corner in a prize fight, and they stayed there for 5 years or so, and then, you know, made their way out again and did it again. I mean, and I think most people, most investors, think that that's what's going to happen this time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you just said. Same thing, pretty much.
Yeah. And I think that's true. I think that is what most investors think is going to happen. And by all accounts, I do also think that's what's going to happen. I think it will calm down. You know, like I said, the geopolitics create the short-term angst. But in the long term, don't price stocks. You and I both know that. People will start to focus on, investors will start to focus on, you know, the economic data, earnings, growth rates, margins, and all that stuff. But the geopolitical stuff just kind of creates, you know, angst in the process. But I think that's the opportunity.
Well, my big issue with the market here is, as we talked for the last couple of weeks, central banks are pouring money into the system. Last time they did that with the, you know, with the cooperation of the cabal of banks where they don't raise interest rates, I don't think they're going to pull that off this time. If these guys keep doing this, in my opinion, we're going to see a 7% 30-year rate pretty darn fast.
I think that's a real possibility.
And I think that's the market's Achilles heel right now. Not a war sure would be, but I'm hoping, I'm with you.
No.
Let's put it that way. I'm 80% confident it's not going to turn out into a war. But, you know, some people, you know, Trump said he left this thing for other stuff. I think he left because some of the guys wanted to turn this G7, evidently, into some sort of, okay, what are we going to do? We can't just bomb Iran and forget about the fact that Hamas was able to do this thing in Gaza. You can't leave Gaza as an open wound. What are we going to do about the whole region? When guys started talking that way, he left town. Now, what? It may not have been for that reason. I wasn't there. But I think the whole area, I don't know if it's the United Nations, I don't know where they are in this mess, someplace somewhere, we've got four countries. We've got Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, and I won't call Gaza a country. We got four places that are basically up Bleeps Creek without a paddle. And we've got Jordan, where the guy's got more refugees than he's got citizens. So we got five places that somehow in the next 10 years have to look a lot different than they do now, or this is never going to end, I don't think.
Right. No, I agree. No, I absolutely agree. And then something's got to be done about it. What? I don't know. I'm not in a position to make that decision.
Me neither.
So there you go.
Well, the first part of solving a problem is identifying, hey, we better fix Kenny's broken leg. you're not going to ever do that until you figure out you got a broken leg, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, bud, you sound great. You doing good?
I am. I'm in New York City, actually. I'm just on my way downtown. But, yes, I feel good. I got one more treatment on Wednesday, and then we'll see how it goes. My fingers crossed.
Oh, we all are, bud. We always have. And, boy, you sound so much better than a few months ago. It's scary.
Yeah, thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
Week.
You take care. Bye. SP Bye. Futures down 24. NASDAQ Futures down 24. Ricky, you want to go over a real quick break and then bring Hal on?
Sure.
Okay.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Tomorrow, Ricky on the board. Hey, we had Matt got some the Beach Boys on yesterday, so...
Oh, that's good.
We got to get the little Sly and the Family Stone on one of these days.
Yeah, for sure. I'll get that done.
I love those guys as well. Boy, too bad drugs took those guys over, because they were pretty darn good. Every one of these bands seem to have had... Hey, Al, you with us?
Yeah, what's up?
No, just talking about... real briefly, because we seem to jump from topic to topic, talking about our two guys last week. If you're a fan of music, I am to a certain extent. My buddies from college are absolutely all over music, always have been. I actually saw Beach Boys in concert. The first concert after when they got back together, they did at Notre Dame of all places, and I was there.
When the guy from the Greek guy, the actor. Played the drums.
I don't know, but it was 19.
Amos.
They had broken up for a while, and this their comeback concert was in, I think it was in 1972. And,
in 72. I thought you were talking about...
I think I was a sophomore. And
I thought you were talking about the 80s, when John Stamos played the drums.
No, this was... They broke up before that in the 60s. I mean, they were around since 62, so they were around a while.
Well, I think Brian...
Brian Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, the conductor. I mean, that guy was really brilliant, I think. He had some issues, didn't he? Mental issues?
Oh, his dad beat the crap out of him, and he couldn't hear out of one ear. I mean, it was... Yeah. He was all messed up.
Yeah.
But I was somebody, you know, this... you couldn't... My music expertise ended when I didn't make it in the fourth grade choir. To the point where the guy said, no, we don't even want you in the room if you promise not to sing for fear something might pop out. I was totally on a different note than everybody else. So to this day, I'm wounded, I guess. But I'm with this Quora thing, and they send me a whole bunch of crap, and I'm interested. So I read it, and one of the stuff was a guy was talking about how good of a guitar player was Brian Wilson, and he was talking about how he's on F major or minor or something, and even before the lyrics start on the guitar, he moves to a different chord.
Yeah,
so
F major.
You know it beforehand. It could have been A, whatever it was. He's talking about how the chord shifting early on was incredibly visionary, where they would actually make the chord. I don't know. You sound like you know something about a guitar, but whatever it was, I should have sent this to you. It had to do with how many chord shifts he was doing in the early 60s when nobody else was doing it. And now they would anticipate the difference in the vocal, and he would already have made the shift beforehand to lead you into the vocal when nobody else was doing it. It was way above my pay grade, but it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, the F major thing is interesting because one of the triplets is in the Burlington Boys Choir, and the conductor was talking about F major at their summer concerts, and he said it was used to present music with pastel colors, and that's Beach Boy music, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those guys were, and I think the old man was somehow involved in the thing early on. That's why all the other guys were, I mean, there's some long story there about the old man never really, they continued to fight and whatever. I mean, the kid was... Well, you're talking about all that stuff where a guy who couldn't hear out of one ear is pretty good, eh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe if he grows up in the 16th century, maybe he's, you know, Mozart or something. But since he was born in the 60s, you know, or 50s, well, yeah, since he was born in, what, the 40s? Maybe he's the 40s, yeah.
Yeah, hey, I wanted to... Wait, totally,
he's a Beach Boy.
Totally off topic, but you can tell how crazy the Stacks and Jacks people are, the stuff we talk about when we're not on the air. The thing I sent out to you guys about somehow or another, this chord, I'm not advertising for these guys. There's questions. If you're dumb enough to write in, like, you know, who's the best shortstop that only had one leg or something, which is probably... Somebody will research somewhere. Somewhere on a softball team, there was a guy who had one leg and played soft. I mean, there are people that appear to have, I use the term, nothing else to do. They actually love to do research on this stuff. Well, somehow or another, I got on... I must have read something on physics and mathematics, and now I get, every other day, I get some story about some guy, usually a guy, who was a brilliant mathematician back in whatever hell day, you know, we're talking about. And all these guys seem to be somewhere between 1885 and 1935, you know, when you did all the stuff on atomic energy and all this kind of stuff. And one of them was some guy was in some school, and the student shows up late for class.
Yeah,
and I did send it to you. Student shows up late for class. The math professor's got all his stuff on the board, and the kid goes, "Hey, let me copy down the notes back before you know cameras and stuff." So two of the problems the guy had up there were his examples of problems that have never been solved.
Yeah.
So the kid takes them home. Not a kid, he's in college. Takes them home. Figures, man, this is one tough homework assignment. Brings it in the next day, and he's got them both solved. And the teacher goes, "What the bleep?" You know, but I mean, this one. When you start talking about people that were, there was one I was going to send you guys last night. Now I seem to have lost it. He had to do it. Enrico Fermi gets older, and he decides he doesn't have a lot of dough. So he's gonna write a physics book for high school. So his wife is a scribe of some kind and a bright lady. She goes, "I'll write it. You just talk." So he starts evidently all they did was fight, where he'd say, he'd start the sentence out, well, it should be obvious to everybody this sort of thermal energy, and she'd go, wait a minute, that's not obvious to anybody. But how is it, how did, you know, people think I'm pretty smart because I remember stuff, which I guess I have a better memory than most, but the idea of, you know, looking at light going by and saying, man, oh man, I should be able to put that on the blackboard and figure out how fast light goes, and by the way, it can't go any faster, and it's relative. I can't even conceive of that stuff, Hal. I mean, and you're a mathematician. How do you even conceive of the problem, much less reduce it to mathematics and actually do something about it? It's so far my pay grade, I can't even... part of me is jealous. Now, and Carl had an interesting comment when I sent this out. He said, back in those days, people who were like that, that had that sort of vision and stuff, they're always usually kind of different. Doesn't make them bad, but they're probably not the same guy, not all the time, they're probably not the same guy you're playing football with in the backyard. He goes, but in those days, if you were just different, it was tolerated. You were a genius. I mean, Einstein, I don't know, could he ride a bike? I mean, they think something's wrong with the guy. Yeah, is he right on that? I mean, have you ever come across in your teaching some kid that obviously was just, did you ever come across the 16-year-old Unabomber? To where all of a sudden, wait a minute, this kid's knows all his calculus in a school that doesn't even teach calculus. I mean, have you ever come across anybody like that?
Well, there was a kid when I was at A&T my first time around, and his name was Amaze. It wasn't pronounced that way, but his name was Amaze. It was spelled that way. And he would come in my office and just pepper me with questions. And if he didn't like my response, he would challenge me. And that's...
How old are we talking?
Oh, he's probably in his 20s. Okay. You know, 19, 21. He had three really good economics internships. He had an internship with the Fed, the Council of Economic Advisors under Barack Obama, and then he had one with Treasury. You know, that's a pretty good set of internships, right? For an undergraduate to get those three in back-to-back summers. But when I was teaching at the AEA summer program, it's a program that encourages or immerses people of color and women in PhD-level economics. You know, it's a math program. It's applied math. It's, you know, calculus with, you know, it's microeconomics with calculus. It's statistics with linear algebra. It's macroeconomics with differential equations, difference equations. It's really advanced stuff for undergrads. And all the kids were just, you know, really, you know, they were sickos like me. I wish I'd known about the program because I probably would have applied to it because I had fun teaching it, but I probably would have had more fun in the program. And I actually envied the kids that were in the program, and, you know, they were just sickos, just different, odd ducks. And you get these guys throughout history that are this way, you know. You go back to the writers of what we call the Old Testament. Those guys are, I mean, if you look at the Old Testament just in terms of the metaphors, if you look at the Old Testament stories, a lot of them as just metaphors, if that's what they intended, those guys are brilliant writers at a time when most of the population was illiterate. And, you know, so history's littered with these kinds of examples. And I remember being as an undergrad, I was living with my grandparents, and I was helping my dad. He was kind of homeless, and he just got out of jail for a 14-year-old DUI, and we're trying to get him back on track. And I'm taking classes in mathematics, and most of the people in my class were just, they wanted to get the work done and get their C and move on in differential equations. But I was just the odd duck in the class. And I remember during spring break, we were given this problem set. And I went home with my homework. I only had homework for that class. And every day of the week during spring break, I was at my parents', staying at my parents' house, hanging with my brothers, going to the bars at night. I was in my 20s. And during the day, though, I'd go to the library when they were at work, and I'd work on my homework. And I remember doing this one problem. It took a differential equation that required 8-page integral. And I was just bent on solving it. And I solved it. It was.
How did you know when you were done? How did you know when you solved it?
I don't know. You just know. You kind of just know. But it was 8 pages. And when I went back to school that week after break was over, the teacher said, "Hey, sorry about the spring break homework. I guess you got a lot of flack. Don't turn in that one problem." And I was like, "What?"
Yeah.
So I walked up from the back. I always sat in the back of the room. I walked up from the back.
Oh, me too. I was always a back row guy.
Yeah. I walk up from the back row, and I put it on his desk, and I go, "Hey, you know, I got the right answer. It's 8 pages of work. You gotta at least look at it."
Yeah. Whatever else,
but
just give
know,
up?
There's just this curiosity in this. I've always been able to solve things, you know. I've always been able to fix things. I've always been able to fix cars, rebuilt pumps and turbines in the Navy. You know, I just had this ability to solve things. I mean, I could visualize the, you know, those physics tests in elementary school?
Yeah.
Mechanical physics. I could always envision, like, the pulleys and the levers in my head, and I could literally look at it, and it would...
I was pretty good at that, but it didn't go much further. By the way, this guy I was telling you about, the guy who solved those two problems, ended up being the inventor or the father of linear programming.
Yeah, yeah. I
what is I remember studying that. What is that used for? I mean, that was our first year of grad school, and so long ago. Well, but I was pretty good at it. But I don't remember. I don't know if I could do it today if my life depended on it.
Well, I mean, it's just all it is linear optimization. Economists do it with indifference curves. Or ISO profit or ISO cost curves.
So these are kind of max min problems. We were really not looking for. There's not a specific answer.
Yeah, I think he came up with, if I remember right, he came up with a, because I taught the class and I took the class as a graduate student. But it's just linear optimization, and I teach it when I teach like management science or operations research. But you know, you have this, you know, I don't know, profit line, and you have these inputs to production. And you have various different constraints, and
yeah, that's a linear program. They're also like simultaneous equation. They all kind of get to the same place.
Yeah, it's
kind of
like that. What you do is you have this objective function which is linear, and it's got a slope, and then you have these constraints that have slopes. They're all linear, and then really what the algorithm looks for, it looks for the point in this geometric shape. Where the isoprofit line is furthest from the origin, and it does that by comparing the slopes, essentially. So it's a really slick way to find an optimal solution, whether it be.
I was not as good on that as I liked the stuff that actually had an answer, because then I knew I had it. I was done with
it. Well, no, linear optimization, it can have an answer. It can also have infinite many solutions, right?
Well, the guy I had for, well, two classes, I think he did his PhD paper on the salesman coloring problem.
Hmm.
For those, well, I don't know how we get off on this subject, but it's a type of mathematics where you're constantly working stuff. There's probably not an absolute answer, but the answer, it comes out to if you're a guy selling sports equipment to 25 different high schools in your state, and you put this where the high schools are on the map, trying to figure out the best route, the shortest route to cover all 25 of them and get back home.
Yeah.
It may sound like it's easy, but it's incredibly hard. It was one of the most.
Yeah.
It was not solved for years and years and years. And this guy was part of a team that I think he was part of a team that. But it has to do with, it's not about just putting X's and O's and it's this mile to that mile or whatever and come. They do all kinds of stuff where the stuff pivots. Where you go to one place and you pivot back another, and you're constantly this trial and error pivoting back and forth, and it's this huge kind of a mess to get there. But then these guys actually got an answer, and I guess nobody had up until they did. I couldn't begin to conceive how to do that, but somehow they did.
You know, they've explored the problem with putting these RFID tags. I think they are RFID tags. They put these RFID tags on, like, bees. Because bees, over millions and millions of years, have solved it. Probably mostly, you know, just through evolution. The hives of bees that are able to, because they act as one organization, right?
Yep.
They're a communal society. where they have each has, you know, a job and they got to go out and get this job done, right? But yeah, they put these, they tag these bees and they use AI to monitor their movements through a field, trying to figure out the, I guess, the shortest path or something. It was pretty fascinating. It was on Netflix, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But typically with, one thing that math and reality, there's a chasm between what happens in reality and what happens on piece of paper. And generally, I think when you're outside of New York City where there's no right turns allowed, you generally want to set up your optimal delivery path for your delivery trucks where you're always turning right.
Oh, yeah. UPS has been...
Because if you get stuck... maybe the algorithm says, hey, turn left here. But that light is long.
Well, it's all part of the constraints.
Yeah.
Models
have to be built with that in mind.
To jump from what we're talking about now, and again, for me, everything. How do you inject this into like a political situation? To where, what kind of common sense is there common sense? I mean, when you look at, say, Putin's decisions, I won't go into Trump because who knows what he's going to do, but and he might do all the right things. I mean, but you look at like a Putin, you sit there and go, constraint number one, I will remain in power no matter what. Okay. Well, if that's constraint number one, you look at all the other decisions he makes, I guess you can sort of predict them, but a regular person probably can't sit there and say, well, if I do this, 10,000 people die. If I do this, nobody dies, or 500 die. Well, then you look at constraint number one, I'm going to stay in power. I don't know if he makes the same decision you and I would.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is I've been rewatching the 24 episodes. And, man, every episode has that kind of decision to make. Starting with the very first season, do I save my wife or do I save 10,000 people, right? So, those kind of decisions, fortunately, we don't have to make those kinds of decisions every day, but, it's just a crazy... And then you get into this corruption, the season 5, where the mastermind is actually the president, and he just acts like a bumbling fool the entire day, and then you find out that he's actually kind of running the show in the background, and it's a really shocking reveal. So I think with most people that work for government, what they do is they use government as a way to... create obstacles and barriers that create monopoly positions for either themselves or their friends and family. That's what government essentially does, and it's sold to us as a way to, public health or national security. But in the end, I think maybe the first dictator. The first dictator is very benevolent and kind.
Well, I don't know how much of a... Hopefully you weren't foolish enough to take 4 years of Latin like me. But since nobody...
Oh, yeah.
Well, since nobody...
It used to be required.
Well, it wasn't for us, but I was so bad at the other languages. Yeah, yeah. But you end up... Since nobody really wanted to learn the language, even the professors or teachers, yeah. You end up doing a hell of a lot of Roman history. And, Rome had all kinds. They had quite a few dictators along the way.
Yeah.
Everybody's history of Rome kind of starts when, with Caesar and the guys like that. Maybe Sulla or Caesar and the rest of the guys coming forward. But before that, when they went to the Senate and the proconsul, where you had two proconsuls running the place, they had in the law, they had people that if all of a sudden you had a big, there was a army coming at you from somewhere, they felt that was somewhat inefficient. So they would essentially grab a guy who might have been a retired general or somebody or other, and they made him a dictator. And,
yeah.
And they had, I won't say 100, but there was some, it might have been 8 or 10 through the centuries. They came in, they did what they were supposed to do, and the second the threat was gone, they said, see you guys, I'm going back to my farm, and off they went. They were like the George Washingtons.
Yeah.
And, and the amazing part, When people, especially younger people, and everybody bitches about younger people, every old person, you look at, the way World War II, and to a certain extent World War I was handled, in this country. It's got to be one of the few democracies that was ever able to efficiently win a war. You know, we were able to pull it off. So all the warts that you think are embedded in our way of doing business here, they're warts that can be dealt with if you want to, in my opinion. Yeah.
Well, the history of war is one between kings, right, for the most part.
Well, yeah. Mike Royko, Europe, they got it, we want it, let's take it.
Yeah, Europe is just probably got 1,000 years of world war, right? Wars that last 10, 12, 100 years. You know, that's Europe. That is the history of Europe, right? And then they would try to maybe make a peace agreement by marrying one king with another nation's princess or something like that, right? I mean, they make these alliances, but and the alliances shift pretty quickly. But that's the nature of kings and queens, I suppose. You know, Napoleon said something like pawns, and what did he say? It was a really good line in the movie Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, something about pawns and something, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, yeah.
I mean, the Romans did. They just conquered people because they were there. They just wanted it. I mean, there was no doubt about that. I mean, you killed the guys.
Rome was surrounded by ungoverned, you know.
Well,
like,
but I mean,
tribal areas.
But
yeah.
you didn't have to. England was no threat to Rome. They went there because they could.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just basically a bunch of small tribes.
Well, they've got stuff. They got women. Let's kill the guys, rape the women, and take the stuff. It's a very easy equation, right?
Yeah.
And, some people, I guess, still like to do that. But what do you make of we've been talking about the Mideast War, and hopefully it doesn't go much further. And we're also talking about those things that bring war in my opinion, create war. You know, well, certainly people that want something somebody else has, but when you've got... I mean, I don't see how over the next 20 years and 30 years, hopefully we're all here to see it, but I don't see how you fix that area unless the five countries that surround Israel are somewhere fixed. And I'm not saying it's their job to fix all these other countries, but but if you've got this... I mean, look at the problems we have here when we have very poor nations to our south. And we have people that totally screwed up Venezuela and other kinds of places. I mean, that impacts people. They think it doesn't, but it does. I mean, the reason why I'm here, is because there was a potato famine in Ireland, right? Duh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, I mean, don't forget your past so much, which doesn't mean that I want, 300 million people from Venezuela piling in here. I'm not saying that, but... To not get the connection, I think, is short-sighted or almost damn near ignorant, right? I mean, if Mexico was a thriving place, it's gotten better, and I think there's hope for them. If it was a thriving place and everybody get a job down there and healthcare and stuff, why would you want to come here? I mean, right? I mean, maybe you might want to come because you like cooler weather or whatever. But the simple fact is, any stress somewhere else to say you're not part of it, and we have, and again, I'm with everybody in how this plays out and how much it costs, but the idea that there's 6 million people in the world that don't have a home, and we're taking none of them, and we expect a guy in Jordan to take 4 million, well, that's fairly interesting, don't you think? I mean, especially when we're the ones that broke Iraq, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're not part of this. All I'm saying is it's all connected. I'm not trying to say that anybody who wants to leave Iraq gets to come here. I'm not going there. But to recognize economic stress and what people are liable to do under economic stress is, to me, it's a lack of education. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. The European philosophy is summed up by Napoleon Bonaparte in the Count of Monte Cristo. The phrase was kings and pawns, emperors and fools,
yep.
Right? That's what it was, right? In this life, we are either kings or pawns, emperors and fools, and a lot of times, I would say, emperors are fools. They get to the point where they're fools, and we are fools in the Middle East. We've been fools in the Middle East since the end of the World War II. We go in there and
we might have been there. I actually have a book I could lob you the title. As soon as oil was discovered there. Yeah. Everybody's been an emperor or a fool over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we install, before the UK and the US, the MI6 and the CIA installed the Shah of Iran, there was a prime minister there that was elected, and the UK and the US didn't like this prime minister of Iran, Mossadegh, I think his name was Mossadegh. Yeah, he was prime minister from 51 to 53, you know, the post World War II era. And he said Iranian oil is Iranian. And the U.S. and the U.K. didn't like it, so they deposed him. And they elevated the Shah of Iran. Now, the Shah of Iran was worse than the prime minister. But he was a bad dude. And then the Carter administration takes out the Shah and installs, essentially...
The Ayatollah promised Carter that he would not take the place over. The minute he got there, he took the place over.
Yeah.
There was a white lie.
Yep. So, I mean, what does that mean? It means, yeah, sure, we, you know, life is between emperors and fools, but these emperors end up being fools. And there are consequences to their actions. And so what we have to do in the Middle East is we got to just, you know, Iran, according to Jeffrey Sachs, an economics professor at Columbia, which I've really come to respect recently with his foreign policy view. There are so many things that the CIA and MI6 and other European intelligence agencies that have they told us stuff in the past that just became, you know, we discovered they're just out-and-out lies, right? And they're telling us now these intelligence agencies, along with Israel, are telling us that Iran is, you know, weeks away from having nuclear weapons. Well, we heard weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. These same people are telling us that the Soviet economy was 50% of the United States, when it in fact was 5%. So there's this long history of these intelligence agencies maybe not lying.
I played golf with a dude that said
overseas,
the intelligence agencies are nothing but the forward soldiers of big companies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And most Americans don't want that.
These governments erect monopoly powers, right? That's how they erect these monopolies for these various different companies, right?
Well, I think the oil companies were the biggest part of our foreign policy for years. I don't know if they are anymore,
we have to stay out of these countries' lives. We have to just say, hey, look, you figure.
What do you mean? They got oil, we want it.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened in the 1950s. From 51 to 53, this prime minister said, no, Iranian oil is Iranian. And the British and the Americans didn't like it. I mean, the American people were like, they probably didn't know what was going on. But the emperors of these two nations said, no, it's American oil. And so they installed a puppet, the Shah of Iran.
Well, UK was all over those places. I mean, yeah. most of the boundaries were drawn by... T.S. Lawrence of Arabia, and wasn't Winston Churchill part of that?
Well, after World War One, I think Woodrow Wilson and his counterpart in Britain were the ones basically creating these artificial.
I don't think Wilson had any smart stuff. I think Churchill was all involved in T.S. Lawrence, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, well, I think it was Wilson's forerunner to the UN, right? Yeah, they're drawing up all these borders there, and the borders didn't make sense, right? It's like in Idaho, you combine Catholics in the north with Mormons in the southeast, and you know, I guess Protestants in the southwest, and you create one state called Idaho. And northern Idaho doesn't really get along with southern Idaho, right? It's kind of like Iraq, where you have Kurds, Sunnis, and Shiite all kind of like in one country, and they don't really get along with each other, right? Because of some, you know, boundary that was drawn by Europe and American in...
Well, they did the same thing in, the Yugoslavia, when all of a sudden, you know, they got a dictator in charge, you know, like Saddam. Not saying Saddam was a good guy, he sure as hell wasn't. But these guys ruled by an iron fist. Who was the guy in Yugoslavia? And as soon as they broke apart, all of a sudden they figured out, hey, these people don't like each other. and they'll start fighting again. I mean, it's a.
I had a student who was Serbian, and her experience in the 1990s and 2000s over that war that Clinton was waging with the UN, her experience is quite the opposite of what we're told in media.
Oh, I don't. I mean, there definitely is some sort of a. You know, I had a lady. There used to be over at the. You were there at the Sirius Cafe. There used to be three young ladies. Now there's actually a one that's also there now. But there were four at the time. There were three that I know of. And they all came from Romania, which was part of that, right? Was part of that area.
I can't. Yeah. Well, I mean, Romania was its own Soviet republic.
Well, and they.
But it's near. It's near there. Yeah.
Well, one of the ones. She sits down one night. She goes. Chief, you got a minute? And I go, sure. I'm sitting there. I hope this is not like a divorce or something, because I know nothing about that. She goes, you know, I was a little down. She's 25, got cute as a button too, and is one of the, just a sweet girl. And she goes, she's married to some guy who was starting a trucking company, and she ended up being the person who told all the trucks to go where to go countrywide when he ended up with like 10 trucks. Guy got one after another, and she was the. Whatever, the scheduler or whatever.
Well, that's a tough industry to break into.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Anyway, so she says, when I was a little girl, when we were under communist control, she goes, when I read the newspapers, I got the feeling that they were read before and edited by somebody. I mean, they're smart people. And,
yeah.
And she goes, and then all of a sudden, we're not under communist control. She goes, people are swearing at each other and they're going back and forth, you know, telling this guy's a crook, this guy's corrupt. She goes, all of a sudden, the newspapers actually did something. I mean, they were actually doing what they're supposed to do. She goes, I come over here, I read the newspapers, and this is 10 years ago, it's way before COVID. She goes, the newspapers here feel like I was in communist Romania. This stuff all looks like it's been read before, it's been edited. I don't get any news here anywhere. I looked at her and I go, lady, from your lips to God's ear, boy, that's what we talk about all the time, right? You know, where exactly is, and you're talking about, you know, where were the people? Where were the you know, weapons of mass destruction? How much is that Iraq war cost us here in terms of veterans care and, you know, artificial legs and arms and all? I mean, not to mention pain and suffering. How much has that war cost us? How many trillion dollars?
Well, I tell you that I think the Iranian leaders, whether you like them or not, I think they're. They're probably confused, because if you remember Muammar Gaddafi, he gave up his weapons program. And what did the Obama administration do? They went in and they financed the coup that killed him. And Hillary Clinton was bragging about how he was alive and then he was dead, and she started laughing about it. So, you know, the mullahs, they're probably scared. They don't know what to do. They want to maybe they want to talk. Maybe they don't. Maybe they want to give up their nuclear program. But if they do, they're kind of thinking, these Americans are going to take them out.
Well, but if you do stuff, if you do stupid stuff, and I'll say here's a reach. It's like people wanting to make a name for themselves, prosecuting Trump after he was out of office.
Yeah.
Just leave the guy alone.
Yeah.
Don't make him a martyr. Don't give him a voice. Don't give him.
Well, they definitely made him a martyr now.
And
the Democrats want to be arrested. Because they think it's a way to get elected. They want to get arrested to get their mug shot.
Well, what I'm saying, but you know, the guys from Iran, if they want to kind of go forward, you don't mess with the Houthis to where you give those guys stuff to mess with people's shipping. You don't mess with Hamas. You do your own thing, because if they weren't bothering anybody and actually just went and were doing their nuclear program, how could anybody get the world opinion on their side to go in and blast the hell out of them? If they weren't considered this threat everywhere, not just considered, I mean, they are. I mean, there's no reason for them to have funded Hezbollah, to have funded Hamas, and to work with these idiots down in the Houthis.
Yeah.
And why do that? Just do it. They could have a big nuclear party, and nobody would have any reason to go nail them, right?
Well, you know, the problem in general that we have in America is that the media and the academy, you know, if you try to be empathetic to a opponent of the United States, It could be any opponent. If you try to be empathetic and try to see the world through their glasses, and that's what John Stuart Mill is talking about. You're not entitled to an opinion unless you can make the case for your opponent just as passionately as your own case. Well, yeah. That's what John Stuart Mill said.
Hey, we got to dash off the break here, bud, but you don't lab a bunch of idiots at some country's ship that could care less about Iran and make an enemy that if you got a brain cell working. Why would you do that?
Well, all I'm saying is I think the mullahs are like thinking of looking at the United States going, dude, we don't know what to do.
Well, they also hate anybody that doesn't think like them. They think the religion should be the government. I mean, that's a problem.
Sure, but it's a 5,200-year-old like society. It's one of the longest.
Well, okay, but we have a.
I don't think they want it. I honestly don't think they're okay with annihilating the world and themselves. They've been around for 1,500 years.
There is a definite schism of thought between somebody who thinks the religious people should run the country and religious laws should be everybody else's laws.
Well, I think if you talk to most Iranian people,
but I mean,
I don't think they...
I understand that, but we think exactly the opposite. And nobody wants the mullah here. Maybe some people want people like that here, but somebody wants the mullah. Nobody wants the mullah here, and guess what?
Well, every faction
They don't want us there, so...
Tom, let's just say every faction in the United States, most factions in the United States, no matter how small or big they are, they kind of want their mullah running the show,
But I mean,
that's why we can't give the presidency too much power.
But in general, people here wouldn't want the Archbishop of Chicago being the mayor.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'd say that's the American way. I don't know who would vote for that. You know, you might want your point of view in there, but
the mullah could be a radical secularist.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you got these different factions in the United States. And that's why the presidential election is so passionate every 4 years, because...
Well, it is and it isn't, because you only have two
people. The party that opposes the current president sees him as evil, while his faction sees him as the savior, and it's the opposite for the other party, right?
That's recent. That's recent.
Yeah.
No, nobody thought...
I mean, it is recent because I think of social media, but again, it goes back to...
Yeah, I don't think anybody... Did anybody think that Adlai Stevenson was evil? I don't think so.
No, I'm talking about really recently, and I think social media kind of feeds.
Well,
it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
corporate media.
I don't think Nixon and Kennedy were buddies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I think Nixon was set up in a black op because he told the CIA, I want to find out what happened to my buddy JFK, and the next thing you know, he's having to resign, right?
Well, anyway, SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 94. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 95. We were a little bit worse than that. This is all because, well, we don't know that. Trump left the G7 early, came back, said everybody should evacuate Tehran, and he had much bigger fish to fry than the G7 meeting. So then the market went down. We're not sure where that's going to land. We got retail sales numbers came out. Fell 0.9% in May, worse than expected as consumers pulled back. Okay, over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 190.8%, FTSE down 26.3%, so not much there. CAC around down 49.6%, so down, but not crazy. Nikkei up 225.6%. Hang Seng down 80.3%. Shanghai down 1%, call that flat. Asia markets trade mixed as investors assess Israel and Iran contracts. So that's what we're doing. We're assessing. We don't know that, but that's what we are. Bonds down 5 basis points, 4.40. This 10-year cannot break through this 4.5 number. And the 30-year is having trouble breaking through the 5, so maybe they won't. Maybe we won't see that raise up. I think we will because I think inflation's going higher, but that's just me. That doesn't mean I'm trading that or advising that. I'm just observing. It seems to me that's what might be going to happen. The Bund 2.5, down 2 basis points. Japan 1.47. Oil up $1.36, 73.13, so way above the $61 number we stuck at forever. Brent, but still, I don't think it's at all time. I think it traded 77. Actually, Brent traded 77 yesterday morning. Brent up $1.50, 74.77, so they're down from their highs. Natural gas up 3 cents, 378. RBOB up 3 cents, 225. It's high for RBOB. Gold down 11 bucks, but 34.05. It's still, still up at the above 3,400, which is pretty high for gold. Silver, however, up 52 cents. As silver and gold continue to kind of go back and forth, one up, one down, instead of moving together, which is really pretty strange. I don't know if it means anything. It's just kind of strange. 36.97 is the whole number. Foreign exchange, the euro's at 115.6, so pretty much steady. British pound, 135.6, so the dollar is down over the last few weeks. Crypto is big move down on Bitcoin today, $2,900. Still about 105,845, so still up there. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Pacers, they're screwed, especially with Halbert and Hurd, eh?
Morning, Jeeves. It's currently 7:41 a.m. here in Chicago. 74 degrees right now with a high of 87. Warm with periods of clouds and sunshine. Possible thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, overcast and humid with a couple of showers and a low of 70 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 87 right now with a high of 112. Hot with plenty of sun. Heat can be dangerous, so try to minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be clear and warm with a low of 84 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Emma Kennedy from Monroe's, 35 minutes. 49 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 38 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 38 minutes. Let's talk about the Stanley Cup Final real quick. Game 6 is today. Oilers at Panthers at 7 p.m. Florida leading the series 3-2. Yesterday, Thunder beat Pacers 120-109 and take control of the NBA Finals. Series is now 3-2. And next game is this Thursday, June 19, in Indianapolis at 7:30 p.m. Lastly, MLB. Today we got Diamondbacks at Blue Jays, 6:07. p.m. Cardinals at White Sox at 6:40 p.m. and lastly Brewers at Cubs 7:05 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at this as you and I've been kind of harping on this the last couple of weeks because of in my youth I used to do taxes for people and when we had all those different tax categories, 16% here and then 17% there and the whole way up, and how I could in 20 minutes I could write a little something-something that you could grade that basically says that the single biggest beneficiary of inflation is the government.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this thing that's...
probably why they understate CPI, right?
Oh, God, yeah. And, plus that helps their banks, too, which seems to be part of government now.
Well, understanding CPI understates the GDP deflator, which it enhances the economic growth rate, too, because you use the GDP deflator, which is an input to it is the CPI. So if you understate the GDP deflator, then you overstate the real GDP.
Well, plus if you're...
It's a two-for-one.
Plus if you have a... I don't think citizens are dumb, but I think the banks think they do. If you have a citizen dumb enough to give you $1 million 5 years ago, pay the person half of 1%, rent it out at 24... Rent it out, which is the exact right term, actually, their money at 28%, and at the end of 5 years... the person has the equivalent of about 650 buying power, so you've sucked them dry, right? Because it's not $1 million buying power anymore. And I'm looking at this this one of the things in this great, beautiful bill, I don't know who actually believes that, but maybe somebody does, the SALT deduction, the SALT is the state and local taxes, right? Now, when this happened in Trump's first term, way back in the day, all interest was deductible, and all taxes to other bodies were deductible. But your rates on your income tax were higher, but there would be a deduction for, I remember when you used to get this huge form in the mail, Hill. I don't know if you remember that, but you'd get a huge form in the mail for you to do your taxes. Okay, now granted, people had taxed people then, but everything you wanted in there, all the tables, all the crap was all in this package. It was, you know, a 30-page package. It would come in the mail. And there was a chart for if you made 20 grand, you know, the sales tax was 6% in your state, you got to take off, you know, $800 or something, whatever the number was. And oh, by the way, if you bought a car and you had to pay, you know, whatever, 8% on 4 grand, you got to take that other 320 off in addition to the 800. So, I mean, it was all set up that way. Well, Trump decides, or his people decide, and this was, you know, you can argue back and forth whether it was aimed at people, but certainly some of the press here talked about, well, these people in Connecticut don't support him, they're a bunch of pinkos and all this kind of crap. And oh, by the way, they have high state taxes, high property taxes, because they're run by liberals, so we're gonna put a cap on this other taxes of $10,000. Good idea, bad idea, you know, I don't know. But what I do know is that when you push the Trump-Biden inflation, which they did over the last 8 years, up to like 40%, this $10,000 number now is kind of nothing, right, Hal? I mean, there's a lot of people.
Well, yeah, it's nothing, right? Exactly.
I mean, there's people. I mean, taxes in my neighborhood.
Well, I think in that time period, we're not just punishing.
Yeah, we're not just punishing the guys we don't like in Connecticut. And the people in Lincoln Park, there isn't a house there. It's under 10 grand. And oh, by the way, a car, if you pay 80 grand for the car, you're talking, what, 7 or 8 grand for taxes there. So this $10,000 number is now pretty much useless. So even if you wanted to keep it, you'd have to raise it to, what, 30 or 25 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what inflation does.
The median home went from 250 to, what, 450?
410.
Time period, yeah. Something like that.
You might know this off the top of your head. Remember, you know, I don't know if you have to do this. I haven't had to do it yet, although I have to calculate it every year. The alternative minimum tax?
Yeah.
I think, and boy, you know, maybe Ricky could find
it. Well, that was eliminated with the 2017.
No, it wasn't.
No.
But what this does is it says if you have charitable deductions and all this other stuff, you can't run yourself down to where you pay nothing. So there's, if you have all these different deductions, you still got to pay something. So I never had to go through, actually when I was in school, I had to go through the calculation, but I haven't done it since. I think when the thing was first enacted, Hal, it affected less than 200 people.
Yeah.
And now everybody, has to do this.
Yeah.
You know, anybody with any kind of, if you own a business or anything like that, your accountant at least has to go through it to see if you got to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff just creeps and creeps and creeps on people, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I'm warmed up to the VAT, where the VAT replaces all federal taxes. Just have a VAT.
I'm gonna have a room.
It works like a 20% sales tax with very little incentive to move things to black markets.
I'm gonna have a room where I'm gonna put my brother, CPA, very bright guy. You and Russell.
Well, you know, the funny thing is your brother is basically putting himself out of business, right, by proposing or by wanting a VAT, kind of, right? Because he does taxes for people, right?
Just friends and family. He has enough work here. He does it for all his in-laws.
Well, he probably wants to get out of doing that work, so he's in favor of a VAT, right?
Well, when he does it for people who used to be producers of the show, and he doesn't charge, but it's not exactly a business, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to charge Angelica.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like I need a buffer between my brothers and myself because they know I can fix stuff, so they were always calling me. When I lived in the same town as them, they're always calling me to fix their cars.
Well, you know, if he came on one day, which never wants to.
He needs a buffer, right? He needs a buffer.
Well, you know, when he came, the last time he actually, back when, you know, you know, there wasn't as much moving around. We weren't doing as well as we are now. He actually did went for this guy for a couple of weekends to do taxes. And Dan will tell you that he actually got some abuse from people. This is right after the original Trump tax cut, right? And the bull crap was that it was going to benefit everybody in the middle class.
Yeah.
So Dan was doing people's taxes, and it turns out their taxes bases, and these are blue collar people. You know, Dan's the best at doing anything he does, right? And he says it ended up being within like $50 a year before, when you took everything into consideration in this massive tax cut bill for the middle class. It ended up being nothing for anybody. And everybody who was the Trumper was convinced that he was screwing up because Trump told me I'm going to be down 20%. And Dan goes, here's the numbers. He said it was the two worst weekends. He quit. He said, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
He goes, well, yeah, it didn't make, if you actually did the return, it didn't make any difference to you.
I think the kind of like the intention of capping SALT was to encourage blue cities and blue states to lower their tax rates.
That was the intention. Yeah. I mean, allegedly.
Yeah. But they're not going to do it.
Well, I mean, it's not about that. It's about they didn't vote for you. Yeah. But who's kidding who?
Well, yeah, I mean, but still, these blue states and blue cities. I mean, my goodness, man, those property taxes. I mean, you're basically what happens in Long Island, and the counties north of Manhattan. The property taxes are surprisingly not very bad in New York City, Brooklyn, and the boroughs. But you get outside the boroughs, and you have to pay a rent on the property that you supposedly own to the state in the amounts of $2,500 a freaking month. There's no property owners in New York State. There's just not. The state owns all property, and it rents it out and allows you to lease it.
To a certain extent.
Those property taxes are over the top outrageous.
I'm not about to.
You pay off your property, Tom, and you still got to pay $2,500.
I'm not. It is. A little of it, at least in this area. If you go up to the north side, actually, if you can go to Orland, or any of those places, the people who 55% of the dough, maybe 60, goes to schools. Okay, in Illinois, property. Property tax pays for the schools. In some states, I think they get more money from the...
But are those public schools any good?
In those areas, they're not only good, they're real good. And if you went by one of them, you'd say, what the bleep? I don't know if they're
good enough to justify $25 a month.
Let me finish.
Property tax.
I'm saying it's a takeover of cash by the people who have kids versus the people who don't.
Yeah,
it's. I mean,
yeah, you know, if you don't have kids, why are you paying
I used to when my stepfather was in the veterans home down in Manteno, I'd go see him every Saturday. In the summertime, there's this great bike trail down there, so I'd leave early. I'd pull my Suburban to the side in the Walmart parking lot, and up I'd go on the trail and I'd do my 25 miles back when I was a little better shape, and then I'd head off to Manteno. And as you drive along the trail, one day I'm there, I'm going, I see this Catholic school, and it's got, you know, a football field and a track and blah, blah, blah. Then I see this school, and I go, what the bleep? Is that a small college? What is that?
Yeah, there's one in Utah.
You wouldn't believe the place.
Yeah, there's one in Utah, I think it's called San Domingo High School, and it is more impressive than probably half the colleges in the state of Utah.
I tell you what, they had as much stuff as Notre Dame did when I first went there. They had tracks, they had football fields, they had soccer fields, they had girls softball, they had men, whatever, they had I'm sitting there going, that's a high school?
San Domingo's expenses per child, the tuition you pay, is a fraction of what you would have to pay the state public schools in the form of property taxes.
Well,
In my opinion, you know, your kids are graduated or you don't have any kids, you shouldn't be paying $2,500 a month in property taxes.
Well, it all comes down to
low-average public schools.
Well, we live in Evergreen Park. Yeah. They would always have these, what do they call them when they're looking for extra dough? It's a special, not a special assessment. What do they call it? Like if some special thing, can we raise the taxes 10% this year to pay for a new football field or something? What do they call those things?
Usually they float a bond, right?
This was actually, well, whatever, but a special something something. Well, Emery Park had mostly a lot of the people there, their kids went to private school, and they had a lot of older people. So my mom would dutifully vote no and all this stuff, right? So they never went through. But if you went by Green Park High School, it looked like they had enough stuff, you know. Well, now all of a sudden, they're winning all these things. You wouldn't believe the place. We used to play, our Pee Wee League ball was under practice field. Well, nobody's playing Pee Wee League there anymore. I mean, all of a sudden, they're winning all this stuff. But if you, I mean, people talk about property taxes. They talk about the red states, the blue states, mostly the blue states, because the, you know, guys like Trump talk about it more than anybody else. But I don't know where I put all this stuff, Al. There was a guy that sent a two articles that I had. One is had to do with every state and the benefits they get from the federal government in terms of how many people have retired there from federal work. New Mexico's got, off the top of my head, like 8 or 9% of everybody in the state works for the government, or some, you know. Plus they have you know this kind of Air Force range, this kind of that. How many people there are retire there and are getting their pension from this? It's an amazing amount of money per person that they get. Now, Illinois didn't get that. They used to have. So then another one was the taxes per state. And you can rail all you want about, you know, Connecticut has high property taxes, or places in Illinois certainly do. I am not justifying that. I'm with you on that. But if you look at the whole picture, like Indiana, their gas tax is cheaper. But if you got a new car, to get your license sticker every year, you got to like pay a percentage of the car's worth or something.
Yeah,
you know, you don't want to die in Wyoming. Their state taxes are to the moon. So I mean, every state, I won't say gets to the same place, but if you combine the two articles, you're going to be cheaper in New Mexico because so much money, government money's pouring in there. Those kinds of things. But I mean, everybody thinks Wisconsin is their property taxes are cheaper. Their income taxes is more. Illinois, they don't charge state income tax on Social Security. Some states do. I mean, unless you actually get this all together with kind of an open mind to just kind of pin it on, well, this blue state, these guys suck. I mean, it's not all that correct is what I'm saying. And a lot of the stuff, the local...
All I'm saying is the property taxes in Long Island, Staten Island, and the counties north of Manhattan, it's just, there's no way.
I would want no part of living there because I don't have any kids. Yeah. But I'll bet you that the people there voted for that dough because they wanted their schools better than anybody else's, and more. Why do you think the property taxes are high up in? Well, look at New Trier, for God's sake. It looks like, I don't know if Southern Illinois is as good a stuff as New Trier. People voted for that. They want it, right? If you and I
guess.
I mean, you know, if you have, what do you have, four kids, and you would love to live up there, and pay $15,000 in taxes and have that coming at you for free or included, as we're paying for private school. You'd love it. You'd love the deal.
Maybe it'd be justified if they did something different with the public school system, like instead of building these, you know, gigantic 5,000 student high schools, they'd have like neighborhood schools closer to people's houses in smaller buildings.
I'm just saying, I don't think anybody's complaining about New Trier.
They did that. If they had neighborhood schools of, say, 500 students all throughout New York City, neighborhood schools like that, and then had open enrollment, the public schools would be so
I'm better. With you. I'm just saying these little areas vote this sort of themselves. I think the local taxes pay for almost all the schools in Illinois. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I would like a plan, honestly, that was different, that the state... If the cost of putting somebody through high school was $20,000, I would like to see the state contribute, you know, jigger the tax around to where the state pays half of it. So even the worst school where people got no dough at all, they have something. And the other people can add on to it if they want. But I think the base should be higher. I agree with you.
I've always thought this when I was a kid. Even when I would sit around, I was different than all my high school classmates.
No kidding.
I would sit around with my stepfather.
You and I think we're both a little different, but...
I would sit around on the back porch. I'd rather sit around on the back porch with my stepfather, Jim, and have these kind of discussions. I've been having these kinds of discussions all my life. I'd be out there 15, 16, 17 years of age on his back patio, with my mom and my stepfather's back patio, while he's trimming his roses. He loved trimming roses. He was a macho dude. He kind of looked like George Burns, but he sounded like Fred Flintstone.
But Jim would, I mean, I would have these long discussions. He would drink coffee. I'd have like a Pepsi. We had these discussions, and I tell him all the time, I think, once you get to a certain age and your kids are out of, you know, they're on their own, your property tax, you shouldn't have to pay property taxes to fund public schools because your kids are gone. If you don't have any kids, you shouldn't be paying the tuition of other people. I just don't agree with that, and I've never agreed with it.
You could certainly go down that road. Should it be a base and people pay a little bit? I think that maybe even
maybe give them a discount. I mean, if you're a veteran and you're retired, why are you paying $2,400 a month in property taxes? Why? Maybe that's why so many people sell their houses.
Our birth rate's bad enough now. You want to make it worse?
And they move to Florida. Maybe that's why they do that.
All right, we got 1 minute. What do you make of the metals here? What do you make of the market? The market is absolutely convinced this is just like the last couple times. Israel blasts, they want to blast. Iran, it's not a token response if the thing lands on your head and you're killed, but a moderate response, it doesn't really do anything to Israel's ability to do war or anything like that. They can't aim the damn thing, so half of them land where they're not supposed to land on people's heads. And all of a sudden, okay, we've accomplished our stuff, and Iran's weakened in the corner, and we go another 5 years. I think the market is thinking that's what's going to happen. I sure as hell hope they're right. Do you think the chances of them being? I think they are 80% chance they're right. It's the 20% worries me.
Well, the thing I'm worried about is if they keep doing it, Iran's going to be thinking, man, we're going to be Muammar Gaddafi'd. So, I don't have any sympathy for the mullahs.
No, did you catch we'll run over a minute here. Did you catch? I think I sent it to you. The article about how they've meticulously not taken out the top guy because his son's worse and they don't want him in there.
Well, yeah, the sons are always worse, right? I mean, you have this benevolent dictator, but his son gets everything he wants, so he's kind of spoiled, and so he's going to be even the worse leader. So, you know, if they take the top guy out, I'm worried. If they keep the guy in, I'm not as worried.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty smart move on their part, but I don't know. Obviously,
if history teaches us anything, don't replace the father with the son.
Well, evidently, to be the top dog, you have to have actually taught religion at these one or two high end schools and stuff. Mm. Now, a kid hasn't done that, and they're convinced that if you take the top guy out, the groundswell of opinion would be that the kid doesn't have to follow those rules, they just can put him in anyway.
Well, maybe the best course of action in if we're going to have regime change, we're going to take out the top dog, maybe bring back the prince, the Shah of Iran. I don't know.
He's dead.
No, the son. There's like a son or something.
Yeah, he wasn't so hot either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pick a... Well, what about the guy that we were going to install as a leader when we took out Saddam? He got over there and they chased him out. They didn't want him at all. What was that guy's name? He was a consultant. Remember that story? Anyway,
yeah,
SP Futures down.
We just got to learn our lesson.
We're never going to do that. SP Futures down. Somebody's always making money. You're not going to learn your lesson. we'll learn the lesson. They make the money. SP Futures down 28. NASDAQ Futures down 108. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.